everyone, and welcome to the Marching Roundtable. My name is Tim Hinton, and along with John Bogenschutz, Joe Allison, and Mary White, I welcome you all to our roundtable discussion about the marching arts. Each of these podcasts, we're going to be discussing a topic having to do with marching band or drum corps, winter guard, color guard, or indoor percussion, addressing issues from the challenging, difficult issues to really simple, mundane issues. So we're also going to be including some experts from these different activities to share their perspectives and experience with all of us. So tonight, our topic is choosing the right show for your group. And we'll be getting right into that very shortly. But first, I want to say hello to everybody. So John Bogenschutz, are you there?
Yeah. Hello. How are you guys doing?
Really glad that we're doing this thing. Joe Allison, we're excited to have you a part of this. Say hello.
Well, hello, everyone. And I'm grateful to be here as well.
Very cool. And then our guard diva, Mary White. Say hi, Mary.
Hey, Tim, how are you doing? And hey, everybody, I'm so glad to participate in this.
Very cool. All right. So we've all said our hellos. And what I want to do now is remind the listeners that this is our very first time to do this. So a lot of things may go wrong. We may talk over each other, mess up, whatever, but we're going to try to just keep it very conversational. And if everybody will be patient with us, because it's our first time, we're very excited. So John, this podcast was really your idea. So I want you to go first and tell the listeners who may not know who you are, kind of a little bit about you.
Yeah, I marched with the Bluecoats back in 95 and 96 and Madison Scouts after that, 97, 98. I'm a brass player, or I used to be. I don't play anymore. right now I'm a marching band composer and arranger. I've been doing that for about 10 years, and I also draw the comic strip Tone Deaf, which is a comic about music.
And it's usually really funny.
Usually.
Cool. Okay, great. And John, you want to say your website where they can find more out about you?
Yeah, you can find my music at johnmusic.com and the comics at tonedeafcomics.com. I forgot the address. I think if anybody knows the address, just tell me it. But I think it's tonedeafcomics.com.
Okay. I think you're right. John, they can Facebook Tone Deaf Comics too, and then you can get the information from that too.
Yeah, we've got a pretty big fan support there, so I'm pretty fortunate with that. So, yeah.
Very good. So, Joe Allison, we're excited to have you here as part of this. Tell us a little bit about yourself in case anybody doesn't know you.
Well, first of all, I'm old. And secondly, I started out as a band person, a high school band director for 18 years and did a lot of design and things at the time. But the last decade or so, pretty much my involvement's been through the context of adjudication in Bands of America, DCI, things like that. And sort of approaching this from the perspective as an academic as well, now that I'm a music professor at Eastern Kentucky University.
Very good. So we have the college perspective, and we have the judge's perspective, and we have the long time perspective. Is that what you're saying?
That was very tactful, Timothy. Thank you.
Well, I really can't make fun about that personally, but moving on, Mary, tell us about moving on quickly. Tell us about yourself.
Well, I just wanted to tell Joe that I think I'm old too, but I'm not. I don't think I'm as old as Joe.
Man, that feels great, Mary. Thanks.
I don't know if that came off the way you meant it to, Mary.
I didn't mean it to come off that way. Of course, Joe, I say that with the most respect for you.
Oh, I'm old off.
Yeah, really.
You've been around a long time in this activity, and I really appreciate your insight. I've been around in the activity about 30-plus years. I march in a bunch of small Long Island drum corps, the one with the most famous name, the Long Island Kingsmen. I marched in the Imperial Knights Color Guard, a winter guard also out of Long Island. I moved to Florida and taught color guards. I taught Lake Mary High School, the Alliance of Miami, and Paradigm. I also taught Carolina Crown and Southwind Drum Bugle Corps. In my real life, my non-color guard life, I'm a principal at an elementary school, and I also teach a master's level class at a local university.
Cool. And what's great about you, Mary, is that you are this great color guard font of information with so much experience in teaching and creating. But you also really come from an educational philosophy sort of place, like how you work with your teachers and your students at your school. And I mean, you and I have a lot of conversations around that I think will be really valuable here.
Thanks, Tim.
I think she adds a little bit of eloquence to the show as well. So, much needed eloquence.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right about that. Well, and my name is Tim Hinton, and you can find out more about me at my website, timhinton.com, or my exciting Facebook fan page, Tim Hinton Music, is where you can find that. I marched in the Phantom Regiment way back in the day on French horn, and was a band director for 10 years. And then the last 18 years, I've been composing, arranging, and designing shows for marching bands all over the country, and writing some concert band stuff too. So I'm really excited to be here doing this too. And you know, I think this is going to be really cool. Now, John, when you first came to me with this idea for doing a podcast, we talked about it. I thought it was such a great idea, and that we were so surprised that there wasn't really anything quite like this out there. Let's talk about why you felt like we needed to do this podcast.
Well, I think it started – I think there was a post that I made or a comic. I can't remember on Tone Deaf Comics about General Effect, or I don't know if it was the comic about grilled cheese. I'm not sure. But but that started a conversation between you and I on Facebook, just doing the messaging back and forth. And I think it got to a point where we hadn't exhausted the conversation. We barely broke the conversation, and right. I think one of us suggested, you know what, we should do a podcast, we didn't say roundtable, but you know, a discussion podcast about this. And I think right away we both just embraced the idea, and it. And as you said, there hasn't really been anything. There's been like a couple things I think in the past we saw, but I think they're more interview based. And correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think they were more interview based.
Yeah, that's all that I found. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was done.
Okay, and what was interesting too is that Joe Allison, you and I had quite a correspondence starting last summer after, you know, my experience at DCI, talking about how we wanted to get people talking, right?
Exactly. And that just played right into my recent experience. I've been doing a series of articles on musical repertory and things for SBO magazine, one of which, of course, featured Tim Hinton and was great.
Yes, thank you.
But my approach is both from that of a person who teaches future band directors, as well as a person that's an active adjudicator. And I just feel like that academically, there's no central location for information in our activity. It's basically based with each individual association in the different media. And so what I'm hoping for is that we can develop sort of a repository of information, both audio, text, just everything, just archive this activity, because we're sending out like the third generation of band directors and drum corps people in the modern age of this activity. And there's just lots of needs for information. And I just think it can be very, very helpful. I'm surprised it hasn't been done before.
Right. And I'm excited about that too. And I think that there's a real need for it. And so I'll tell anybody that's listening that we have a resources place on our website at marchingroundtable.com. And we're going to just start putting that chock full of everything that we think might be helpful to anybody in any category of marching in any way. And so that's going to be our goal, is for that to grow as the podcast grows too. Mary, do you want to weigh in on this?
Well, Tim, what I wanted to tell you is that people can ask questions too on the website as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a feedback thing. John, you set that up. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, it's just it's basically a basic contact form, but it's called feedback. It's at the top of the menu bar, or top right of the menu bar. And if anybody has any questions or comments about the show, just go in there, put your name. I think it requires your email address. And then, you know, just ask away or give us comments about the show. And I believe that we're going to use that if anybody has additional input on what we just talked about. Is that right? Or if they want to know more about a subject. Basically, you can use that form any way you want to know more about the show, or if you want to request a topic or expansion of a topic that we talked about.
Right, or let us know what you think. Like, if one of us says something and you think that we're completely off base, like, we would love to know that, because it's quite possibly that we will be at some point, if not constantly.
I can guarantee it that I'll be off base.
Well, I have a very important question then. All right. Are there any taboo topics on this particular avenue other than Charlie Sheen?
You're kicked off, Joe. We made a pact before the show.
We had a request for note Charlie Sheen, and that's been busted. Mary, I guess you see how this is going to go.
I see how it's going to go, and if you keep up bringing Charlie Sheen, Joe, that's going to be it.
Okay, well, I'm gonna take this opportunity to move forward, because yes. one of the things I want to do each week, is very early in the podcast, is I want to give our listeners the marching tip of the week. So what we want to do is create just this moment where we're going to give you a short tip, something that you can go away with. So even if this is all you listen to and you turn off after this, hopefully you'll have gotten something. But so here's what we got. I contacted a friend of mine, Jack Jean. He's the director at Whitewater High School in Fayetteville, Georgia, and he's a really terrific judge at band contests and things. And he has a tip that I think is really helpful. So I asked him for it, and here it is. I'm going to read it straight off the page. He says, "Want to make your kids look taller? Check the length of your uniform pants or bibs. Hem them a little short for a nice clean line with no break. Puddles of fabric at the ankles make them look short and sloppy." That's what Jack writes. And he's mentioned that to me before. You know, I don't want to misquote him, but the idea was that when a band even is coming out onto the field or standing there in the opening form, that detail matters. Now, Joe, you are our resident adjudication expert. Does this hit you?
Well, it really does. And the truth of the matter is, having done a lot of effect judging, it's amazing, though, how many times that you don't hear input about the costuming and the uniforms. And I've always wondered why, because obviously it has a huge impact on the program. But believe me, things like that are registered almost immediately.
Wait, so let me get this straight. The length of the pants should be hemmed to where they're like, I don't know. Explain it again. I'm not a visual guy.
It's just so that there's no break in the seam, either in the front or the back of the slacks.
Okay.
Right. What you don't want is for it just to them to look unkempt at the bottom and messy. You want everything to look clean. You know, like when you see the top corps marching around or top bands, the line of the leg is this straight, perfect line. There's not a lot of extra fabric flipping around. And I think this is one of those sort of intangible things. You might ask somebody even, you know, what was wrong, and they might not realize. But I think it really matters. And the trick for me is, as a band director, I know that this is one of those things that's like not on my radar. Like, I am so worried about every other trillion things. So my advice would be, if you're a band director and you're listening to this, just make a note right now or send an email right now to the band parent in charge of uniforms and just say, hey, let's make sure and do this. Click, 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 and you've got it done. And she can put that on her to-do list. But I think it really matters. And I appreciate John for the tip.
Or his to-do list, just in case it's a father that's in the band parent. But I also wanted to say, Tim, we spend so much time looking at eye level on the marching band field, especially as band directors are – We're up in the stands and we're at a high level, but we're always looking at from the waist up and really, for the visual look. And we look from the waist down for just marching execution. Let's look for the waist down for that aesthetic look. Let's make sure that looks great too.
Hmm. Where were you people when I was teaching high school band all those years?
Yeah, really.
In diapers.
Mary, that's two strikes, and I don't know what happened.
I think that might be probably accurate for me, though.
Definitely. You probably weren't even born yet, John.
That's probably true for you, John, but I can guarantee it's not true for me. But I don't want to dwell on that subject now. All right, so another segment that we want to add in, and I want to go ahead and move to real quickly. Before we get into our discussion about finding the perfect show for your group, I want to take one more minute, and we want to do something, at least initially in these podcasts, where we talk about a marching memory that somebody has that they want to share. And we're hoping that listeners will go to our website and click on that link and send us their marching stories, because I think everybody has at least one either hilarious or embarrassing or really moving thing that happened to them while they were marching. So tonight, John, you've agreed to tell your marching memory story, and I'm going to give you that opportunity now.
Yeah, this is definitely not moving. So it's not so much a marching story. It's more of like an arranging story. And I'm telling this because I hope that future arrangers can learn from this, or even current arrangers. But early in my arranging career, I was fortunate to have a little bit of success with my music and how bands were doing competitively. And so 1 year a band had won state that I had written for. So the next year in the area, a band director asked me to come out and work with their visual program, which had nothing to do with my arranging skills. But while I was there, they wanted me to write the ending of the show, and it was a Russian show. So I agreed. I was like, yeah, sure, that's fine. I think the closer was Festive Overture. So he just wanted me to write the tag. So I was writing it. I was like, oh, this would be awesome to throw in a little quote of Scheherazade. The bum, 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 in there during the tag. So I wrote it out. I emailed it to him. And he calls me back. And he's like, I like it, but why did you put Phantom of the Opera in the tag? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I go back and listen to it. I had written in bom 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 instead of Scheherazade.
Oh god.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. It, needless to say, I was not hired to do the arrangements for the next year, because I think that was part of the feeling out process, was that he was like, hey, let's see what he can do with this.
So, Andrew Lloyd Webber on line two.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah.
That's so funny, because you're right. There's so many tunes flying around in our heads. And I can't imagine we all haven't done that. That's really funny.
Yeah. Well, and it goes with, I mean, I think after that, it goes kind of with my philosophy of you can't be too prideful of your work and you can't be too fearful. I think there's got to be a healthy mix of having pride and fear when you're working with something, a good balance of the two. And I think I may have had too much of the pride going in on that one.
Very cool. That's a great story. Thanks for sharing. So again, anybody that's out there that has a story about creating a show or performing a show or anything around a show or band or drum corps or anything, if you want to share that with us, there's a link on our website, marchingroundtable.com. You'll see it on the right-hand side. John did a great job setting the website up and having that there. Thanks. So cool. Anything anybody wants to say about any of this before we jump onto our topic? I'll take that as a no, and I'm going to move right ahead.
Well, actually, I do have one thing to add, Tim, if you don't mind. Mary, at my advanced age, I think we need to really speed this up because it's past my bedtime.
It's past mine, and you know it. Joe, you're not even that old.
Yes, I'm starting to feel it.
And listeners, as you don't know this, but we're taping this at 5:30. But anyway, let's
A.M.
Somebody just got back from the early bird special. But anyway, that's enough on that. So tonight's topic, we said, what can we find that's really helpful to anybody the first time we do this? We decided choosing the right show for your group. So this is a very broad topic, and we're probably going to do pieces of this topic later for other shows. But we just wanted to have a discussion tonight. And again, it's our first time, so we don't know how this is going to go. But everybody has something to say, and we'll react to what each other says. So how does a band director or a drum corps director or anybody that's helping to put a show together, a color guard person, indoor drumline, whatever, how do they choose the right show for their group? Like, what are the ingredients? What are the things they need to think about? Anything about that. So who wants to jump in first? Anybody?
Well, I think one obvious thing is the difficulty of what they're trying to perform and compared to their talent level that they're dealing with. Because as we know, every high school marching band has strengths and weaknesses. So they have to accommodate those strengths and weaknesses with what they're picking out.
Okay, then we're going to get right to the heart of this as far as I'm concerned, because both as a high school band director for almost 20 years and as a judge for about 30 years, my biggest frustration is always the excessive demand of marching band and drum corps shows. It seems that, and I had the same problem, we would constantly try to make the simultaneous responsibilities very doable for the students so that we could really work on excellence. But the more we dug into the program, it's just that things got more difficult maybe than less. And particularly as an educator, when I judge all over the country, I see bands of a certain maturity level trying to do material that's just technically and conceptually way beyond their grasp. And it's very frustrating because you know that it's never going to come to fruition.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do you mean when you say when you dug in, it got worse? I don't understand that.
Well, just different layers of concepts in really difficult, particularly with the simultaneous responsibilities that, you know, it's like peeling an onion one layer after the next and just to continue to clean and to make things accurate and particularly to try to have any level of excellence. It's very, very difficult. We relate to that in concert music. You know, with our college wind symphony, we're always the last thing before a concert practicing the white notes, not the black ones. And it's the same thing in outdoor band. I'm sure John, well, Tim, you can relate to that as well, teaching music for so long, that there's just always another layer of concept and technique to achieve. And I have never, ever, ever gotten a marching organization to peak. We always talk about, are you worried about peaking too soon? No, I'm worried about peaking at all.
Yeah, that's a good point. But do you think part of it, because you mentioned as a judge, you keep seeing more and more complex, unnecessary complexities built
in. Exactly.
But I know as a marching arranger, there's times where I write music that I think is difficult, or I'm like, this is way over the heads, but the director comes back to me and he's like, this needs to be more difficult. And I know I'm thinking, man, I'm like, if anything, it needs to be less.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that, because that happens a lot to me when I'm writing for someone for the first time. And what's great, if I'm writing the music and the drill, then it's the easiest way to answer. But a lot of times a director will say, or especially like a young staff member will say, you know, where are all the notes? You know, like, this is not hard enough. And I will say, okay, but you have to realize that these six measures where there's not a lot of notes on the page, they're going to be, you know, flying across the field at 6-5,
yes,
you know, at a slide backwards, you know, on roller skates. And, you know, so you have to know that you have to plan for all those complexities when you're designing. And that, so a lot of times that's my answer for people is, you know, you don't have to do everything hard all the time. If it's going to be a hard drill moment, then the music shouldn't be.
Right.
I think that is the same for color guard too. I often wish, and I often say sometimes to groups, let's teach them how to stand first. And it's not the most wonderful and exciting thing to do as students, but I love for people to learn how to stand beautifully and wonderfully first. Really understand placement and alignment of their body even before they put the equipment in their hand, because then everything is just a natural extension of that. The equipment becomes one with the body, so everything is natural. So it's very, very important, those layers that you're talking about, Joe, really build on the layers until they make an onion rather
exactly
than very, very piecemeal.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think another thing that we need to consider, we're mostly, I think, referring to mechanical difficulty, technical difficulty, which is what band directors I talk to normally refer to when we talk about demand. But conceptual demand is every bit as much an issue as is the technical.
More difficult, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So give us an example of what you mean by that, Joe.
Well, just simply, again, in the musical realm, playing some transparent piece of music that doesn't have a lot of rhythmic activity but requires a lot of depth of expression. The textures are very transparent, and, you know, it just takes such a level of excellence to achieve. And, you know, night in and night out, it's difficult every time you do something like that. Mm-hmm. Again, I refer to that as the white notes.
And I refer to it all the time as filling space, you know, to just even
yes
fill that space. What you just said, Joe, for music could be duplicated and said again, just for
right
the way we do color guard work.
Exactly.
So it's sort of like it's so much harder to march correctly at 60 beats per minute than it is at 144?
Well, the mistakes go by quicker when you're marching at 144, quite frankly. I mean, it's the same in music. If you slow things down and there's such an exposure, and slow extreme timing is every bit as difficult as fast extreme timing. It's more of a mental challenge. Yeah. Mary, I love you.
You made up. when you're talking about conceptual, so you're talking about I think you were describing that as concepts of performing well, right?
Understanding.
Go ahead.
Well, just understanding what it is you're thematically that you're, or theatrically that you're trying to portray, and bringing all, not only all those techniques together, but also, you know, just embodying what it is you're trying to do. And, okay, you know, at the most excellent level, that's a very real concept. That's performance beyond execution.
Yeah, it's, right, it's transcending the performance, and that is very, very mature. Those skills are, you know, way mature than many, many performers can handle. And I'm not suggesting that we try to boost the difficulty of things. I'm definitely not. No. I'm just saying, when choosing a show, to really consider the performer. I think that's what you're saying, mm-hmm. too.
Absolutely.
So conceptually, you're talking – see, I think we're seeing – I'm seeing this two ways, and I don't want to hammer this, but conceptually, I think it's like performing well with a good sound, with good movement skills. But I also thought that you meant conceptually like what the show is trying to say and what the show is about and what their role is in portraying that. You mean that too, right?
Absolutely, yes. It like the Bloom's taxonomy, the higher order thinking skills, going way beyond just mechanical techniques and embodying, like you say, the role that you're trying to portray, whether it be through musical expression or body expression. I mean, it really does transcend the nuts and bolts of the responsibilities.
And those, I mean, I hate to get back to Bloom's taxonomy, but those higher levels are synthesis and application. So you think every performer, whether musical or dancer or color guard person or drummer, you know, is synthesizing and applying everything that they've learned at that given moment in time. That's amazing.
Exactly.
Okay. So I think we've gotten to something really important here, because to me, the big danger for new band directors is they so love that, the complexity, the depth, the emotion, that these great shows they've experienced or they've been in or they've seen, and they immediately want to do that with their young group. And so every young band director shows up in front of a group of kids who are usually not equipped to try to deal with that. So what do you say to that young band director who so desperately wants to have those levels of complexity? How do you tell them, okay, look, you can't start there. You have to start back here. How do we do that?
Well, I'll tell you one thing before you even talk to them, because I know I always have the band directors fill out forms about their band level and everything, and each instrument, what level of technique and tone they're at. Scott Borma gave me a very good piece of advice many years ago, is that whatever they tell you, take it down one notch right away.
And Scott's a pro. He would know.
Yes, he is a pro.
So are you saying that's because they are being optimistic, or is it because you think that you need to be a little more conservative to help them do better?
Well, I think it is good that they're optimistic about their group. However, I think what you're alluding to before, Tim, is that sometimes directors forget, and I want to say this right off the bat. I don't think directors are idiots. Okay, I know it might
far
sound
from
like that
it.
Way. Right. I think they sometimes some directors forget about all the other responsibilities that an individual performer is going to have to be doing, such as the visual or body movements.
Exactly. Let me put it in my frame of reference again, because I constantly struggled with this with competitive marching band. The design staff would make a conscious effort to make the demands less on the performers, but we somehow could never do it. I mean, it was just, I know that doesn't make any sense on the surface, but the more aware we were of it, we still got out to start teaching things. And again, it's that onion that you're peeling again. There's just more layers of depth to create excellence. And so I guess one of the things that I say to band directors to be here all the time is you've got to have an appreciation for the process, not just the product.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's great, because really you're right. Like, you could spend hours talking about, you know, playing four whole notes if you wanted to, because there's so much inherently in music, and there's so much inherently in moving as a marcher on the field and then interpreting a show. Like, there's with the most simple music or drill or concept, there's so much you could do. So why, like, I think what you're saying is you created something simplistic, but then you did all you could with it, and that's what made it so great.
That's the excellence, exactly.
Do you think there's a, I don't know if it's just me, but do you think that there's been this, I don't know the correct word, a faux pas or, I really can't think of the word.
Misconception?
Yeah, I don't know, that where directors are afraid to do something simple because they're not going to be rewarded for it.
Yes, absolutely I do. I hear that as a judge. I'm sorry to jump on it, but I hear that so often. And I mean this with all respect. I have never had a person come into a critique, either in marching band or drum corps, that didn't look at me in the eye and tell me with all sincerity that theirs is the most demanding program that was at the event. Hmm. And you know, I used to laugh about it, but then it occurs to me, well, they now know more about that program and what it's taking to put it together than anyone.
Right.
So to that intimacy breeds respect. Therefore, they really do believe what they're saying. But everybody feels that way. So, yeah, I think that's totally it. There's this thing about you've got to have more of everything. And that's something that we addressed in these SBO articles, and Tim did as well. It's just gotten to be sensory overload. So at some point, we'll start talking about the judge's viewpoint of all this, which is also way too much to digest in context.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'd like to say that my experience in creating shows for a really long time, because I was creating shows for my own band and for bands even before I was a band director. So I do feel like I have a perspective. And I will say that almost without a question, the most successful show concepts I ever worked on were the most simple. You know, and a lot of times the best shows I've ever seen, they took one very simple idea and then explored it to like every way you could possibly imagine. That is so much more effective to me, to take something that's simple, not easy, but simplistic or simple, one straightforward idea, and then really explore it. That has always worked out better for me. Mary, you know what I'm trying to say. Can you say it better?
No, I think you said it perfectly. I just think that starting from that root simplicity and then adding layers on, instead of dealing with the layers when they are coming from a very difficult layer, very difficult part, and trying to peel away the layers, you're adding layers on. So you're building the onion. You're not peeling the onion.
Hmm.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe to get, would it help if I gave a quick example?
Yeah.
I will briefly, real quick, but I don't know if this is helpful, but like a few years ago, I did a show for a band in Texas, Frisco High School, and it was five. So we just took five. So it ended up being some 5/4 time stuff, and then there was Mahler's fifth, and there was Beethoven's fifth, and Tchaikovsky fifth, and then you know you have five on the flags, and you have groups of five in the. And so that was a very simple idea that you could do a trillion things with, and that show, you know, was a big hit because it was so straightforward. Does that make sense, Joe? Am I?
Yeah, and the key point here is unity of concept. When you have something that's that literal that people can understand, then everything you do, they understand in context of your main motive, so to speak. And so the organization is just built in for the viewer as well as the performer. So, of course, that works.
And
okay,
really
so we
everybody
have,
wants to have that organization, Joe, that you talk about. I mean,
right.
The viewer wants to see organization like that on a field.
Absolutely. I mean, I had somebody tell me one time that a certain – and this is a unit – whose name is very familiar to all of us, that told me one time that their visual design in one particular movement was supposed to be the inner workings of a Swiss watch. Please. I said, well, why not German?
Nice.
I mean, you know.
Okay.
All right, yeah,
so
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. So, all right. So let's, if I could shift for a second to another nuts and boltsy kind of way to choose your show. I feel like a lot of band directors struggle with, is it the show for the football crowd? Is it the show for the contest judge?
Yes.
Like I have that discussion with every client, that, especially when I'm first writing for them. So I think that's something that band directors struggle with. Somebody speak to that topic.
Well, I think you, was it the article that you wrote that, when you ask them what you like this to be for the audience or the football crowd or the judges, and they almost always say both.
Yeah.
It's always the answer is they want it for everyone. And honestly, if you write a great show, I think it should be good, workable for both. But I do think that there tends to be a leaning one way or the other. Joe, don't you think the shows you see are leaning one way or the other?
I certainly do. And sometimes I think that it's almost, there's the perception out there that if the audience can understand the program in one viewing, that it must not have enough depth or merit to be viable as a competition vehicle. Hmm. And nothing could be further from the truth.
Right.
I agree. But, I mean, I just think when you present a clear, well thought out program, regardless of what it is, it's going to be accessible for the judge, for the band audience, for the band members. That's really important too. We can't forget band members.
Absolutely.
And for the football crowd. I mean, I mean, who doesn't love, you know, Tim, I've been involved in some shows that you've done where the opener is just so exciting that you just get caught up in it. Who doesn't love that?
Yeah, and let's embarrass Tim for a moment, because I want to say I've seen several of his shows over the years, and one of the greatest things about it, when you have one talented mind coming up with the entire concept, the audio and visual concept, mm-hmm. and therefore there's that marriage that occurs. Well, it's just like my dad always says, you can be tacky, but you can never be too obvious. And so, again, that sort of has a negative connotation in our activity now, being obvious, but it can be the most impassioned, artistic thing in the whole wide world because there's unity of concept.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. That's nice. And thank you.
thank you.
I just want to backtrack just for a second, because I think that I want to give this advice. If there is anybody out there that is going to be a band director or is a new band director, or if you're a band director going to a new school, I always give this advice to people. And that's that sometimes you have to think long term. You have to think 5 years, 10 years. You can't always think this year. And a lot of times if any new director comes to me and they say that they're going to a new school, then I would say, you have to write that show for that home football crowd that first year. You know, like if it's a good show, it's going to do okay at contests, you know, but you have to make that home crowd love the band from the first show. In fact, I'll tell them the first thing you play needs to just knock their socks off the first game. You know, I don't care if you limp through the second tune. That opener should rock their world. And when you're deciding on a show concept and show music, there are definitely times when it is appropriate to say, I'm going to write for the hot dog eaters in the football crowd, and I'm going to make them love the band. And that's always especially important early on. You know, if I'm the new director, I want to go in, I want to make a splash at home. That home, you know, that principal in that football crowd doesn't really care if I win first place on a Saturday. They want to love the band. Does anybody else understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I do, but what about, because I had this situation recently. What about when now you're talking about a new director going into a band program that's already established, right? Or,
well,
not a brand new school. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that it depends on the level of the school. I mean, if they're walking into a school that's been winning contests for years or whatever, then that's different. Then they just sort of carry on where their band has been.
Okay.
But most times, especially somebody straight out of college, but anybody that's new to a band program, a lot of times programs aren't in great shape when you take them over. Something bad has happened, or it's been a little neglected some way, or something's happened. I don't know. But it seems like a lot of times when people walk into a new situation, it's not, you know, somebody that was at a state contest the year before doing great.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's what we tell our students here, that the first job you get when you get out of school is going to be the job that nobody else wants.
Yeah, really, that's true. And my point is, when you're thinking about what deciding your show should be, if you're smart, you should need to say, you know what, maybe in 4 years, 5 years, I do that concept that I've always wanted to do that's perfect with da-da-da that requires playing skills, blah, blah, blah. But right now, you know, maybe I need to pull out that Spanish opener and just let her rip.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Tim, because not only to get comfortable with the principal and the football crowd and everything, but also the director's going to start to establish his own rehearsal technique. And if you're starting out right away with a difficult show, it's going to be harder to do that. So if you're taking baby steps or doing the rehearsal techniques with the simpler show, you're going to be able to really refine that a lot better over the years, because it's going to be more ingrained, I think.
Yeah, and a 5-year plan to somebody stepping out of college may seem like forever, but I, you know, from my perspective, that is just smart planning. You know, you just don't go into, well, to use my personal analogy, you don't go into the gym and bench press 225 for 20. You go in and you do the little weights and you start. And so you have to do the little weights with your band sometimes. And I would also like to say that if you're new to a school that is a new program or a building program, I also think it's more important to sound good than to look good or to do a lot.
Thank you.
You guys agree with that?
Yes.
Oh, yes. It's music education.
That's what we're doing.
And I know there's no way to change this, but this is the very beginning of the year. And so you should be establishing the fundamentals.
Right.
And I think it would be awesome to have marching band at the end of the year where
exactly.
You have the fundamentals in place and everybody knows the rehearsal techniques and everything. But yeah, this is first of the year. You have freshmen who have never marched before. So.
Right. And I think that the crowd responds to what the band sounds like the most.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There can be no doubt. And again, you're developing the things that we talk about here in our methods classes are nothing succeeds like success. I get so tired of these books that have been given to us from on high that tell you that you can only play this certain literature and it has to have all this artistic depth and merit. And so you end up giving students things that they're not ready to perform yet or appreciate. So
right.
you meet them at the point of their need and you develop success first, then you move forward.
Mm-hmm. I also, to sort of switch gears again, this is a great discussion so far. I'm so excited about this. I also think that there's something about matching a show to the personality of a director or the personality of the band, which I think usually end up eventually matching up. I always think that the band usually takes on the personality of the band director. But I think that it's okay when you're deciding on a show to do something that you like. Like, I mean, good grief. You're going to live with this show for months and months and study it and work on it. And so I always think it's a mistake if somebody chooses a show for a judge or they think I have to do this kind of show to be successful. You know what? I've seen every different kind of show imaginable be successful. So my advice is, make sure you're choosing a show that you like, that you can enjoy working on for this whole long slog that marching season can turn into.
Right. And I think a good example of that is Wayne Ackerman when he taught at Centerville, did I get the name of the school right? I don't know. Centerville?
Wayne Markworth.
Wayne Markworth. That's it. I'm sorry.
Wayne Ackerman was a good band director too, by the way, in Kentucky.
Oh, that's who I'm thinking of. Okay. Yeah.
There you go.
Wayne and Markworth. One of our graduates. Sorry.
Cool. No,
you're right, because I knew Wayne Ackerman actually, but I don't know Wayne Markworth except for a couple of meetings. But yeah, I'm going to take it that his background was jazz, and he just blew the bands out of the water by performing jazz every single year with that marching band.
Absolutely.
So, right.
And by the way, he's a great educator as well. I've told him this story, so I'll feel free to tell it in public now. I used to see him with the Centerville Jazz Band at these contests, and Wayne would always have on this trench coat and this hat, and he'd look like kind of a sinister gangster kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I always thought, that guy, he must just be just hardcore. The first time I met him, he is the most compassionate, wonderful, caring music educator you could possibly want to meet. So we had a big laugh about that because he's just great. But yeah, he's a great example of taking what you know and elevating it.
Yeah.
Right. Knowing your own strengths and what your own likes are. And I'm telling you, whatever you love, your kids are going to end up loving too, because that's the way this works. Whatever you love, your kids are going to love because you're going to share that passion and love with them. And that is true on the marching field too. Don't think that you have to play some, you know, contemporary composition with no melody. I mean, just to get a score. I mean, I really think that you can play any tune. And if it's arranged well and it's staged well, you know, I mean, I've done Beach Boys shows that I'm just as proud of as a Tchaikovsky show or a Shostakovich show or an original composition show on a very high concept. Like, you know, anything can be done well and with limitations. So, you know, it's all about being smart, using your resources and making smart choices in how you put the show together, you know. And if you're smart and you talk to the right people to help you, But I really just feel like directors feel like it has to be so complex or so high-minded. And, you know, we want it to be good, but it can be something you love.
Right.
And I think too, Tim, when you're, you know, when you're telling this, it's all in that positive framing. If you're passionate about it and it's something you love, it's going to come out and it's going to be so positively framed that everyone's going to be on your side with it. Everyone will want to follow you. You know, you'll be the Pied Piper.
You can tell this is a group of educators because that's exactly it. They feed off of your passion and they can tell when you're not sold on a product as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I've always regretted when I've feel like I've sort of coerced a director into doing something that they really weren't into. And I'll tell you, it's never gone well. Like, I've always regretted that. You know, the director has to buy into it. And sometimes I can convince them to buy into it and it turns out great. But, you know, you have to be into it because your kids are going to know if you're not.
Right. And they're going to have to deal with it but they're going to have to hear it all season long. So if they're tired of it, day one of band camp, it's not usually a good sign.
I always say that about Wintergard's too. When I watch Wintergard on the floor and I hear music and I said, I can't imagine listening to this 600 times during rehearsal, that's an indicator probably that the kids are not going to like it. The audience is not going to like it. It's not going to be well received.
Right. That's great. Great. And I think the same thing. I mentioned the personality of the director. And I also think that bands have personalities. You know, I've had really smart directors say to me, you know, my group of kids next year, they're this kind of group. You know, I need to do this kind of show with them. And then the next year, you know, maybe depending on the student leaders or, you know, it's high profile players, but, you know, groups of kids have personalities and likes and dislikes too. And if you're smart, give them something that's right for that group too.
Well, what do you feel about when a director comes to you though, that you've been working with and that they've done really well with their shows that they've been performing? They've been pretty entertaining, but then one year they come up to you and they're not convinced of it, but they're like, we need to be able to have a show that's going to compete better. And they're only doing it because they want to compete better, and they're so convinced of this that the shows that they've been doing have not been doing it just because of the music we've been selecting. I've come across that problem, and it frustrates me because I know the music will work if you let it and are passionate about it, but they feel so convinced that they have to be doing what the number one band in the state is doing.
Oh yeah, it's such an imitative thing. I mean, the marching activity is like fashion. You know, what's hot this year, what's hot next year. But what I've found in dealing with the most creative and, what's the term I'm looking for? Accomplished people in this activity is that they follow their own direction and it leads them to what they want to do. And, you know, it's genuine in that case. So every day there's a passion for it. There's a passion from the performers and it elevates everything about, again, the process. And when it's not that way, well, one of the things I'll probably talk about at some point is all this research that's been done on motivations and rewards and whatnot. And it's just very well known in education that an extrinsic reward is not a very effective motivator most of the time. You've got to enjoy what you're doing for the reasons you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, that's a whole nother podcast topic.
Oh, yeah.
As is the one that John mentioned about competition, choosing for competition's sake. I will say that most people that I know would look ridiculous in a couture gown. You know,
you haven't seen me in one.
I'm so glad.
Neither has my wife, by the way.
I have one more thing I want to make sure and say on this topic, and that is that, and I think we've already said it, but I just want to emphasize it, that I always tell every band, our job, especially if I'm writing a show for them, you know, that's what's, of course, so great. If they can hire someone to write for them, then we're tailoring exactly to them. But you always want your show to highlight your strengths and hide your weaknesses. So, you know, if I'm writing for a group, I always write for what they have and then try to hide away what their weakest points are. And there's ways to do that if you're smart and you take your time. And it's hard to do that if you're finding a show that's out there, but it's still doable. You know, I mean, I've written entire shows around, you know, one first chair Allstate trumpet kid.
Yeah.
You know, when my low brass section could, you know, barely get their horns out of the case. But if it's written smartly, people don't realize it. And I've written shows around one dancer girl that, you know, can fly through the air and grab her leg and hold it by her ear. And like, you can build a show around her. So, you know, it's all about writing for what your band has. You just have to figure that out. What do I have that's special? Who are my most talented people? Let's create the show around that.
Right, right. And this is a little bit off topic, but Tim, do you feel like you get like cycles of like where there's just like 2 or 3 years at a time where every band has no good trumpet players? And then like after that, every band has good trumpet players that you're arranging for. Do you ever get that?
Yeah, sometimes. It's weird.
It feels like I get that all the time. It's like a cycle. I mean, it's never mellophones, but the trumpets are... always like either really great for every band I'm arranging for that year or terrible. And I just, really weird.
Go ahead,
topic. Tim, I'm sorry.
Tim, could I go back to your topic? It's okay, John. And I was thinking about color guard use. It's very important for the visual program of your marching band. This is a very oversimplified example, but if you're going to play the music of Chicago and you don't have color guard members that can dance like Fosse, that may be a consideration, you know, or if you don't have a color guard instructor, and many marching bands don't have that instructor, how are you going to incorporate them into the show too? That has to be considered too, because a lot, we're just not only thinking marching musical, we have to think of visual too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You have to program for what you have. And if you have a strong, you know, what does your guard do? You know, are they weapons people? Are they dancers? Are they just really young? You know, so you're right. You have to choose a show concept and, you know, based on those people too. We kind of have to start wrapping this up, but I do want to say that we have posted an article on the website that I wrote called The Genesis of Show Ideas. And so in case anybody's interested in more information, it's also on my website at timhinton.com, but it's an article about, like where ideas for shows come from, which is a little bit off topic, but sort of on the same thing. So we need to start wrapping this up. Does anybody have anything final they want to say about this topic?
I think we could like have a whole slew of other podcasts about this topic, because I think we only talk about two things: difficulty and choosing it for the entertainment or competitive nature of it. And we didn't breach anything in that, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that we're going to have to revisit this and maybe be more specific on these specific issues. But I think this has been a great sort of starting point for having a discussion. Anybody else want to say anything before I move on?
I just wanted to say one thing about knowing yourself as a person, as a band director, knowing yourself and knowing your kids. I think start there first.
And my last statement is to my two colleagues from the state of Florida. With 35 seconds to go, North Carolina leads Florida State 69-68 in Tallahassee.
Okay. And I don't know what that necessarily had to do with anything, but that's fun.
It makes me happy.
That's great. And we want to keep you happy, Joe, because we're happy you're here.
Joe's now, in a robe recording this, eating popcorn. he's got his headphones half off.
Yeah, I'm a little disconcerted that you're thinking about that. But, you know, let's move on. We have two more quick things to do. We're going to try something where we have what we call a marching puzzler, where we're going to give the audience out there a sort of trivia question about something that has to do with marching in some context. And then we will tell you the answer next week. And if you're smart, you'll know it, or if you had that experience, or you might want to see if you can find out. But anyway, if you listen to the next podcast, which will be up 2 weeks from now, which will be podcast number 2, we will tell you the answer. So I have tonight's marching puzzler. And if you know it, panelists, don't blurt it out, because we want the people at home to have to try to figure this out. So here it is. Which was the first drum corps to receive a perfect GE score at DCI finals? At some point in the history of DCI, there was a drum corps that got a perfect score at DCI finals for the first time in GE. And I'm wondering who that is. And if you know the year, all the better for you. So we will give you the answer to that puzzler next week. Don't say you know the answer, but does anybody think they know the answer, panelists?
Yes.
The answer is De Sacre Bleu, Charlie Sheeners.
Oh, goodness.
You should look to see who's on the finals panel that year.
Oh, that's an interesting. That's very interesting. Okay. And yes.
Tim, I just wanted to say that John has set me up with a website, not a website, excuse me, an email address, and it's mary@marchingroundtable.com. If anyone wants to contact me about any color guard issues, I'd be happy to address them.
Awesome. And we can all be contacted through the feedback page at marchingroundtable.com, right, John?
Yes. I can set
generally. Specific. If they say, hey, you know, they can say, hey, Tim, I want to comment about this, and they can put it in there, and we'll all get it.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. I want to let you know what's going on. Who our guests are for the next few podcasts. We're very excited. We have a really illustrious set of people that are planning to be here to have discussions with us. The next podcast, number two, we have Jay Kennedy, who is just a legend in DCI. And Joe, can you very briefly tell our listeners who he is in case they don't know?
Surely. Jay has held pretty much every position in the marching pageantry activity. He was a longtime percussion judge in DCI and BOA, and then he became the judge administrator for DCI. He works now at the Berklee School of Music in Boston. He writes the wind arrangements for the Boston Crusaders. He also wrote the theme music for some of the DCI broadcasts. I mean, Jay's got his fingerprints over most everything in this activity, and he's an outstanding person and a very strong mind, and I think you'll enjoy hearing what he has to say.
That's cool. I didn't know he wrote the theme music until you sent that email out a couple of days ago, which I thought was very cool.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very cool. So that is somebody that we are really excited to have as a part of our discussion and to pick his brain on all kinds of things. So we will be doing that in podcast two. In podcast three, we're going to have David Starnes, who is the band director at Kennesaw Mountain and a DCI judge and BOA judge. And he's going to be talking about giving your band, your marching band, a distinct personality, because I think he's been the master at that. And that is going to be really, really interesting. And then the fourth podcast, we have Michael James, who is just a color guard whiz and a movement guy, a lot of drum corps movement moments for the winds that people know. Michael James was all about doing that and creating that. And so we were going to talk to him on podcast four. And we have other really illustrious people set up for later podcasts. So we're just so honored that they're interested in being a part of this and helping us out with this endeavor. So let's all say one last word. Joe, last final words for anybody out there?
Go Tar Heels.
Okay, John.
Yeah, nothing professional advice here, but if you heard like kids crying at the beginning of this podcast, it's because there's three kids who had to go to bed in the other room. This is not a dungeon chamber. Don't call child services. They did not want to go to bed. And I know that you probably did, because I could see on the little sound radar thingy that my microphone was making noise when I was not talking and they were crying. So I just want to say that. I want to put that out there.
Go, Mary.
I'm really excited to be a part of this, and I hope that we can all contribute to everyone's growth.
Yeah, awesome. So thanks everybody that took time to listen. You can find us on Facebook at Marching Roundtable, and we'd love for you to sign up there and like it, and then we can send you notices about when the podcasts are up. And we hope that you'll go to our website, marchingroundtable.com, where there's resources. You know, obviously these podcasts are there. We're hoping to also have them on iTunes very shortly. And you can also, you know, contact us, send us your marching memories, send us tips, send us questions, feedback, anything you have to say. So thank you so much for listening. Thanks, panelists, for being here tonight. And we're all done. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Good night.